So I thought I'd get us in the mood with just a little blues music here, if that's all right.
Oh, sure. Okay. You know, I wish people could see this because Jeffrey was actually doing both, playing the harmonica and also playing the piano. You've got some kind of contraption, right, that holds the harmonica.
A harmonica holder, yeah.
A harmonica holder.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we've got to talk about the math aspect of this. So explain to us, I mean, we're listening to that music. How is math involved with the notes that we hear?
Right. So when we hear a note, you might think, you know, how do we hear one note instead of another? And the answer is that the note comes from a sound wave, which is, you can think of it as little packets of higher density air that kind of come into our ear. And the frequency, which is how quickly those little packets are coming, is what determines the note. So, for example, if I play that note, well, that's a middle C. And that corresponds to about 262 hertz, or it means 262 times a second, there's a little higher density packet of air that's coming into our ears. And that's what makes middle C.
So middle C is equal to 262 of those packets.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So then, but then other notes, well, they just have different numbers. So if I go up, let's say, to a D, well, that's a little bit higher, right? Here was C and here was D. And that just means the packets are coming in a little bit more frequently. There's about 294 of them coming every second. And that's what makes it be a D instead of a C.
Okay, so is that consistent? Like the higher the note, the more packets are coming at
us. Exactly, the higher the frequency, as we say, which means the faster that these packets are coming in, the higher the note.
All right, so then let's talk now about what sounds pleasing, or at the very least, harmonious to our ear. You know, when you played that little piece at the beginning, right, that sounded pretty harmonious to me. Everything seemed pleasant,
yeah.
Right? I didn't hear sort of any discordant type notes.
I was doing my best.
What are you doing? Well, okay, why is that though?
Yeah, well, so it's certainly true that certain notes fit together better. And as I say, all notes are described by their frequency. So when you understand the relation between the frequencies, you can understand the notes. So for example, I mentioned that here's middle C again, which is at about 262 hertz, or 262 of these packets every second.
Right.
If I now go up to high C, exactly an octave higher, it's a lot higher. And why is it higher? It turns out that an octave apart, so from this C to this one, is exactly twice the frequency. So it means if I play the higher C, those air packets are coming in twice as frequently as if I play the lower one. And if you think about it from the point of view of sort of the waves or how these packets come together, it means they fit together perfectly, because somehow for every one packet we get down here, we get two of them up here. So it means if I play them together, it sounds almost like one note, right? They fit so well together. I mean, it's two different notes there, but they just fit so well. And the reason is because one is exactly twice the frequency of the other, so they fit together perfectly. In fact, they fit together so well, it's not even that interesting. And even if I play a bunch of different Cs, they all fit together, so I've...
So is it
notes.
All about fit? That's what makes it sound harmonious?
Well, I think it's all about fit, yeah. So, I mean, the most extreme, as I say, is these octaves, because they fit together so well, it's almost like the same note, even though it's a lot higher. But then the other notes have different ratios of their frequency compared to the first one. So if I go back to middle C, which is about 262 hertz, or 262 air packets every second, then I say, well, how does that fit in with other notes? Well, if I compare it to, say, a C sharp, well, that's just a little bit higher. And if I play those two together... That doesn't sound so great, right? I mean, it's not impossible to use that in music, but they don't fit together really cleanly. Whereas if I play, for example, C together with E, let's say.
Which is a major
then
third.
Then that's the major third, exactly. And the major third, turns out that the ratio, the E is about 1.25 times as much frequency as the C. So it means basically for every 5 packets of the C, we get 4 packets of the E. And that's a nice simple ratio, so they fit together in a way that's nice and pleasing.
Okay, let me just go back then to that C and C sharp, right?
Okay.
That sounded unpleasant,
right.
I think, for many of us,
there
right?
It is, yeah.
So are you saying then that ratio is not a nice, even ratio?
That's right. C sharp is about 277 hertz, or 277 packets every second, and 262 compared to 277, there's no nice, simple relationship. They just don't fit. They're just kind of packets coming all over the place, and it doesn't fit well.
Okay, what does that say then about noise? When we hear something that we would consider noise, does that mean that those sounds have just a terrible fit?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, usually if you hear some sort of noise, it's really a mixture. If you could think of it as a mixture of a whole bunch of different notes, or if you want to be precise, the Fourier decomposition says there's a whole bunch of different notes that kind of mix together to make up some crazy wave, which is this noise. And usually, unless you're very lucky, these crazy different waves, they wouldn't all fit together well. And you end up with just the noise, something like... And that's just a whole bunch of notes, and they don't fit together, and it just sounds like noise.
Okay. Now, what about minor chords, right? So if you were to play a minor chord...
Minor chord.
Yeah. So... I think very often when we hear something in a minor key, it gives kind of this sort of negative feeling.
Yeah.
It could be, it sounds sad, or it sounds melancholy, or maybe even it might sound a bit threatening or dangerous.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why do you know, what's going on there mathematically?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. So I already mentioned the major third, like C and E, and they fit together in a way that's really pleasing.
Yep.
The minor third is C and E flat. And it's got a different sound to it, so they still pretty much fit together. In fact, the ratio is about equal to 6 to 5, so it means that, you know, 6 of these packets corresponds to about 5 of these packets. But somehow the way it fits together, it does fit together, but in a way that, yeah, we find more negative or sad, or it's got a different tone to it.
Yeah. See, now, why is that, though? Right?
Well,
I mean, why would I or people attribute... a negative feeling, maybe sadness, as I said, you know, or melancholy to that, as opposed to the major chord, which we think, oh, that sounds happy and pleasant.
Yeah.
Why would we do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a good question, and I guess I don't have a great answer. I mean, I know the ways in which they fit together, and I certainly know, you know, from playing music, how they make us feel, right? And as to the minor chord, you know, we feel sort of sad with it, and certainly I make use of that. But as far as sort of the emotional reaction that we have to the different kind of notes, it's very subtle. It's sort of the domain of psychology, and I don't think it's so well understood even now.
No, but you know what? I'm guessing here, but if you're talking about fit, and if we tend to gravitate towards pleasant sounds, and those pleasant sounds happen to have a good fit, is it because there's something intrinsically within us that wants that kind of fit, and that, you know what I mean? We lean towards that. That is attractive to us. And then when things don't fit as well, it's not positive. It's more negative to us.
I think that's certainly true. Like if you play, let's say, you know, a nice chord, like, you know, C major chord, and everything sort of fits together, then as I say, the mathematical reason is that these packets are kind of lining up right. And I think you're right that humans are sort of drawn to things that fit together in some way, that are harmonious in some way. As far as exactly what the emotional reaction is, you know, we just learned that from playing. But I think that's right. I think compared to just, you know, random notes or random noise where things don't fit together, I think we're more drawn to the case where things fit together in some way.
Except maybe when we're feeling depressed and melancholy, then we want to hear that kind of sound.
Well, even still, you might want to hear something sad, but you might not want to hear just random noise then, right?
You know, I think many of us still think of math as being precise and not so creative. And then when we think of the arts, we think, it tends to be imprecise and creative. But what do you say? I mean, you just demonstrated, right, this relationship between math and music. What does that say, do you think, about the relationship between math and the arts in general?
Yeah, well, it is interesting because I think you're right. The perception is, you know, math is completely different from the arts, but I think it's not that fair. First of all, there's a lot of math people like me who also play music, so there's some connection. And people have described it as sort of that there's room for creativity, but within a structure too. It's not just, you know, crazy creativity, do whatever you want. In math, there are certain rules for, you know, what equations make sense and don't. And in music, there's a sort of rule for what things fit together and what things sound good together. So there's some rules, but there's some creativity. And I think, first of all, a lot of people don't appreciate the creativity in math because, you know, a lot of people's experiences, you know, you have to multiply the timetables. And,
yes.
And if you get it wrong, you have to stay after class. And, you know, there's no creativity and you have to do what you're told. Whereas to someone actually working in math, it's quite different. We're trying to think about new ways to understand things and new ways that things fit together and new ways that mathematical ideas can be applied in other areas too. So I think there's a real creative side. And at the same time, a lot of things in the arts, including obviously music, as we've been discussing, they really do actually have a mathematical foundation. And, you know, there's a whole science behind how to make the instruments and how to make them sound right and how to make the notes right and so on. So when people say, you know, I'm just in music, I don't care about math, I think they're exaggerating the distinction a little bit.
Yeah, sure. And you know what? That now it makes me think about theater, you know, and the way people are placed on a stage. I mean, there's math in that, the way a scene is constructed. Poetry, there's math involved. There's syntax. And
yeah,
I mean,
certainly the rhythms and so on, and things like the geometry. Also, for that matter, light, which is very important in things like theater. Well, light is just another kind of wave. That's an electromagnetic wave that gives us light, and the frequency of that is what gives us color.
Yeah, dancing, like, the angles.
Sure, you know, angles and
we
rhythms.
Could go on and on. Absolutely. Do you think math is underappreciated that way?
I do in some ways, yeah. I think, and certainly I've tried to make a point of trying to explain to people in different ways the importance of mathematical thinking in all sorts of different domains, yeah.
Fantastic. This was fascinating. Thanks for coming in, Jeffrey.
Okay, thank you.